Again, I'm very pleased to coming down here to Writers Week this week. We get to meet a lot of the authors whose books we've looked at in our 891 book club. And I'm not sure, how many, a show of hands, how many people like reading short story in our audience here? Yeah, we're seeing quite a few hands. I must admit I grew up with not very much exposure to short story. However, it's something I'm becoming more increasingly interested in because I think it has a great form and a way to send some wonderful messages. Now, a book we looked at last year, a collection of short stories, was called An Astronaut's Life. The writer behind that is Sonia Dekian, I should say, Sonia Dekian, and she joins me here at the 891 ABC 10. Thank you for joining us, Sonia.
Thank you for having me.
And I feel like I might get in trouble here because you're an ABC producer as well, so you know what you're doing around all our equipment here.
Most of my background's in television and online.
Oh, so that's good to hear.
I'm relatively inexperienced in radio.
That's good to hear. Not relatively inexperienced in writing, though, although this is your first collection. You've been writing for some time.
I have written other manuscripts for novels, but this is the first thing that I've had published, so it is still quite new in that sense.
Okay. You said a novel, so you dabble in all the different writing areas, do you?
I dabble, yes, I try.
I imagine there's quite a bit of difference, though, between writing a short story and a novel, and I'm still not entirely sure on the definition between a novella, a short story and a novel. I don't know whether you want to clear that up for
us.
I
think it's flexible.
Is it?
It comes down to technically the word count, I guess. But, I mean, there's definitely short novels that I would think is a novel and someone else might call it a novella. So I don't think it matters. And I think that's somewhat how I feel in general about writing short stories. I don't always know how long something's going to be when I start writing it. So I don't. In some ways, there's no difference because you have the idea and you start writing it and you see what happens. And in other ways, I think that there are challenges with both that are slightly different in terms of if you want to write a novel, there's a lot of, you know, there's probably a lot to fill in, a lot of the sort of in-betweens, how you get from here to here. But with a short story, there's the opposite problem of compacting everything down into a small space and knowing exactly what you want to say and when to get in and when to get out.
Yeah, okay. That it strikes me that there are a lot of grey areas in a lot of what you do because you write, you have a literary side, but you are also very science orientated, aren't you?
Yeah, I studied marine and environmental biology when I was at uni, and then I did science communication. So, and I still at times freelance as a science communicator and work on research and writing for documentaries and natural history and science documentaries. So
when I heard that, it explained The Foreman to me more than
okay.
any other, which is a short story that Sonia has written. Maybe you could talk about the premise of okay. it, if that's all right.
It's The Foreman is about a man who is a foreman of a theme park that is currently under construction. And the park itself contains a number of animals that are either extinct, and these are the last remaining specimens, or are almost extinct, as well as some sort of animatronic recreations of extinct animals and landscapes. And The story starts with the investors who funded the park about to come and inspect the park.
And something dramatic happens to one of the animals, which becomes part of the whole life, death, and what extent you'll go to, I guess, to save your backside in a way.
to save yourself.
Yeah. Interestingly, though, all these stories are in some sort of other reality, it seems, although it seems very familiar. So I know people throw the word dystopian at you. Are you comfortable with that term?
I'm okay with that term. I feel like there's a lot of terms and I don't fully know how to define what it is that I'm trying to do.
Yeah.
And so I'm not uncomfortable with any of them. I feel like sometimes what I'm doing falls in between the gaps.
Yeah, because it's not necessarily a degraded or destructive world. It's sometimes quite personal and familiar. It just seems otherworldly somehow, but with a great deal of familiarity.
Yeah, I think of it as a sort of a dream logic where you're in a dream, you know the things make sense to you while you're in the dream. They only don't make sense when you're outside looking in.
Yeah, yeah. So you can't entirely say they're realistic, but they feel very, they feel quite real.
Yeah, I think they make sense while you're inhabiting them.
Yeah. Sonia Dakian is my guest. I'd like to talk to you about the story Nights at the House, which I must say is my favourite one. And I'm not sure if that's because it's probably the most real one of them. But one of the connections I saw with all the stories is that you talk about people in a very isolated way. Although they have people around them, a lot of what they're going through or experiencing is as when we're on our own. Was that deliberate or is that just a sort of happy coincidence?
I think initially it was a little bit of a coincidence, and then once I picked up on the fact that that was a theme, and the theme, I guess, it's about powerless. People are being, they're alienated and they're powerless and they lack connection to a wider community. Once I tapped into that, I started to consciously explore it a little bit more. So I guess I expanded it throughout the collection. Mm.
So in Nights of the at the House, there was a, this is basically a story where a couple have a police knock at their door and the backyard is dug up because it seems like there may be a body in the backyard. And it's quite a long story going through this process of how that makes them feel, and it sort of reflects, I think, on their own relationship.
Yeah,
also.
I think it's sort of an analogy for the things they're digging up about themselves.
Where does this story come from? Is that a conscious thing that you're doing, trying to look at those sorts of aspects?
Some of it is, and some of it isn't. So
because it seems so unrealistic, and yet it possibly could happen to anybody, couldn't it?
And I think the starting point of it, that often with the stories, I was discussing in my session yesterday, there's often an image or something that sticks in my mind, and that's where the story starts. But that's never really enough to maintain an entire story. So in that case, I guess since I was a child living in Adelaide, I had a kind of fear and obsession of missing children. And, you know, I was reading the paper at a young age, and there was one case in particular.
And there are plenty to bring up in Adelaide, sadly.
That I was quite obsessed with at a young age. And it's always kind of stuck with me, this kind of thought about the family and what happened and that sort of thing. And from time to time, you see those stories in the news where police dig up somebody's backyard and the people that live there have no connection to the situation, potentially. They just happen to live in the house. And I'd always wondered what that was like. And that was where it started from. I just thought, what would that feel like to have the police come and have to dig all of this up? And then from there, I just took it, you know, to the next step, sort of beyond what was realistic, and started to use that as a way of exploring this couple's relationship and the things that they're not dealing with, the things that they've hidden and buried and within themselves and within the relationship.
Or refuse to look at.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. That they maybe knew were there all along. Mm. So it's kind of, I think there's an implicit guilt in both of them because they didn't know that this had happened at their house. And, you know, I guess when police turn up at your door, even if you didn't do anything, maybe you start to feel a bit guilty anyway.
And you feel a connectedness to something that you had no connection to. I mean, forevermore, you're going to have a connection with something that was not of your doing.
That's right. And I think you probably feel like you can never feel the same way about your home after that.
Mm. I'm sure you're absolutely right about that. Here on 891 ABC Afternoon, Sonia Feldhoff with you through till 4 o'clock, speaking to another Sonia. I don't get to do that very often. Sonia Dakian. I'd like to talk to you about After Francis Crick too, because, and I'm sure this story is one that you get asked about all the time. I reckon this is probably the one that people would talk about the most out of your book. Would that be fair?
I think it might be, but I've been really surprised at how diverse people's responses are. The people that tell me, I liked this one or I didn't like this one, it's completely different every time.
Yeah, well, After Francis Crick, it was with a man who basically goes into a coma, heads off into a world where he's communing on a very intellectual level with Francis Crick, who will discover your connection with him in a moment too, and then comes back out of the coma to have to deal with his wife in that world, during which time she has become pregnant to him during the coma. It's quite the story. Now, Sonia, tell us about the connection with Francis Crick first of all.
I guess that comes from my science background. He is someone that I just found quite fascinating, just based on his sort of genius, I guess. Like, he just seemed like a very intelligent.
And for those of us who are not familiar with his work,
he's known as the father of modern genetics. So one of the team that discovered the DNA double helix. along with James Watson and Rosalind Franklin. And I think him in particular just stood out, I think partly just his sort of gentlemanly persona. And he also had been involved in a number of other projects that didn't result in earth-shattering discoveries, but potentially were a little bit crazy. And I quite like that aspect as well, that sometimes people that are a genius are also, you know, have some crazy ideas.
But what one of the fascinating bits of this story is that this man comes out of the coma and then cannot sort of reintegrate himself into the world. He's completely disconnected, it seems, from his life. And I wonder if that's a reflection of many of our dissatisfaction with life and the way we aren't really connected to our lives anyway.
I think it is. I think for him, he has experienced something that very few of us have the opportunity to work alongside greatness and to be part of a potential earth-changing, you know, discovery. And that, I think that's hard to turn your back on, to just go back to your normal life of going to the office and doing your job.
But I think that probably reflects many people's view that they never have achieved maybe the heights to which they've wanted. That's certainly what I took out of it.
I think so. I think that's that's one of the things that is in there, I think, on one level. Just we don't know anything about his life before or how he went into the coma. I mean, that in itself is a strange and potentially interesting story, but he doesn't feel like he's interesting or that his life is interesting. And so the things that happen to him while he's in the coma are in some ways better than real life.
The short story collection you've put together with An Astronaut's Life is the first published work. You've been writing for a long time. Do you see yourself continuing down the short story avenue, or would you like to explore some of these other areas of writing?
I like writing short stories, but I'm not committed to any particular length. I think I'd like to start with the idea and the thing that I want to say, or the politics or whatever it is that I want to say, to me is more important than the length that the story or the novel ends up being.
The interesting thing about short story, though, is that often they're ambiguous. You come out of there and you go, I'm not quite sure what that meant, or I'm not, you know, and that seems to be okay with short stories.
That's true.
Not so okay with novels, although there are ones that you could explain.
It might be a little frustrating in a novel, I think, if you don't.
I don't want to invest 400 pages and then not come up with an answer.
That's true. I have to think of a way to deal with that, because I am very prone to kind of leaving people in limbo.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us here, though, talking about your work, and good luck with your continued career.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Nice to speak with another Adelaide girl doing well, Sonia Dakian.